morning, everybody. This is a different role for me, having to give the sermon. So bear with me. Thank you so much for joining me. And so I did choose that previous song, which is Invisible by U2, and part of the reason why I chose that song was because of the chorus, which is, you know, there is no them, there is only us. And so I want to talk about the concept of oneness today. There's so much going on in the world which says oneness is not occurring. We have all the things that's going, all the things that are going on in the Middle East. We have the riots that are going on outside St. Louis, Missouri. There are all sorts of conflict going on in the world, which makes us wonder, is oneness really possible? Can oneness really occur? And it's something that I think a lot of us have been thinking about, it not only on a macro level, but also on a micro level, where we look at the relationships within the workplace, with our families, and with our friends. And I've noticed from a lot of people's anecdotes and stories that conflict has been really rife for a lot of people this past year. And so part of what I want to talk about is, how do we come into oneness? How do we manage to come into this divine interconnectedness that we're always talking about every week? So one of the things I wanted to talk about was the concept of namaste. And everyone knows that namaste means, you know, the divine within me recognizes the divine within you. And namaste, of course, is associated with South Asian culture, but that's a concept that's not just limited to South Asia. I just came back from San Diego, where I attended the Filipino-American National Historical Society conference, and the theme of the conference was actually called Kapwa, as a way towards unity. Kapwa is a Filipino word, but it's also a concept and a way of living, and it's all about oneness. And so I was actually really excited to hear about it, that this existed within my own kind of personal background, and I didn't even know about it. So it's kind of funny. I feel like I've been living it and not really realizing that it actually existed within myself on an ancestral level. And one of the things I also want to talk about after I talk about Kapwa is also this concept of ancestral healing, because it's all interrelated. So Kapwa refers to the self and the other. It means you and I are one. You and I are one with the Creator, with nature, with all species, with the spirit world, and with the cosmos. And I thought that that was so lovely that I was just shocked, because it was a professor out of one of the state universities in California who's made this one of her main issues of study is Kapwa. And you know, having an academic background, having been in academe, you don't see very much in terms of this intersection between spirituality and intellect. And so it was really, really exciting to see that. And so, you know, in thinking about Kapwa, I was thinking about other traditions. And I don't know if anyone is familiar with the movie Avatar. Did anyone ever see that one? Okay, do you remember when the greeting, I can't remember what the tall blue people, but their greeting was, "I see you."
The Na'vi.
Thank you, Scott, the Na'vi. "I see you." And that is actually, I looked it up because I wanted, is that an actual greeting? Like, you know, because they said the Na'vi was, of course, based on kind of this idealized indigenous way of life. And actually there is a culture, the Samburu tribe of North Africa, that has "I see you" as their greeting. And what they say is, they say "Sawabona," and that means "I see you." But then the response I thought was even more beautiful, "Sakona," "I am here." And so you can translate it, "Until you see me, I do not exist. When you see me, you bring me into existence." And so when you think about it, it talks about how really, no, it's the entire concept, no man is an island, no person is an island, we're all together. And the way that we're together is by recognizing who's in front of us. You know, how do we recognize who's in front of us? So we are all interconnected. We have a need for validation that comes from the feeling of wanting to belong somewhere. And so when you think about conflict, about the reasons for conflict, a lot of it is, the root is, I want to belong somewhere. I want to feel right so that I can belong somewhere. And so part of what we need to do, or I feel like we are doing actually, is realizing that it's not just ourselves as individuals that want to feel acknowledged, important, valued, loved, but that the other person wants the very same thing. And, you know, that is the crux of vulnerability, is to recognize that the other person who may be causing you great turmoil and pain in your life is really seeking the same things that you are seeking. So why are we fearful? Well, part of it is related to the fear of rejection. And so that drives us to create personas that represent what we think others want to see. So when you see instances of clownishness, when you see instances of alliances that may be detrimental to other people, part of that is that people are looking for the sense of belonging. But that sense of belonging is not rooted in love. So that's the difference. The oneness that we talk about, the community that we want to achieve, the alliances and collaborations we want to create are not rooted in the fear of rejection, but in obtaining love and in opening our heart chakra and letting that in. And without the fear of revealing our true selves in a way where we think we're going to be hurt. So what happens when we're not grounded in our heart center, you know, in our interactions with others, you know, so we become plagued by feelings of loneliness, emptiness, sadness, falseness. So the beauty of Agreedient says, I see you, lies in recognizing the true heart of the other. But we have been taught to hide our hearts because we have been taught that vulnerability is the pathway to pain. We may have been punished for our sensitivity, may have been called weak or worthless, we've been told to toughen up. And the truth is that we have been taught this by people who have been closest to us, by our parents, our siblings, our friends, our lovers, our spouses. We have been taught that we deserve love only if certain conditions are met. And so as a result, the need to protect ourselves eclipses opportunities for kindness, generosity, understanding, love. So when the fear of pain shuts us down, we have no way of seeing that another way of being exists. We come to expect that punishment and the ruthlessness as the only end results. And so how do we do that? You know, part of it is like, how do we do this? How can we strip down the defenses where we can finally recognize the other person who's in the room with us? And part of it is the work that we have to do on ourselves. A few weeks ago, when I was conducting, I had the quote by Rumi, which was, when I was young, I wanted to change the world. Then I became wise, and I wanted to change myself. And so therein lies the key into obtaining oneness, is before we can obtain oneness with each other, we have to become whole and integrated within ourselves. When I was a young child, I was really deeply sensitive. Small things would move me, sunlight through the leaves of the trees, glimmer of dewdrops, the sad chords of a love song. Because I could feel so deeply, I could feel the emotions of others. And in experiencing the emotions of others so acutely, I came to feel that I was somehow responsible for the feelings of other people. How many of you are like that? You're so sensitive, you feel like, I can feel exactly what this person is feeling. I can feel their anger. I can feel their heartache. Somehow I'm responsible for that. And I became, you know, so for many years I thought it was my responsibility to be responsible for other people's feelings, to somehow make other people feel comfortable. But what happened in focusing on other people's heartaches and issues is it led me to issues of codependency, and it also deflected what the real project was, which was myself. The real project was within me. So we have to kind of undo that old conditioning associated with people-pleasing. With me, it was the concept of being a good girl, which meant, you know, you are responsible for my happiness. And I was told sometimes by my parents, I'm happy because of you. or other people, I'm unhappy because of you. And that happens a lot. We see this in our daily interactions. We're on the road. Someone cuts us off. People are acting out of anger and viciousness and loneliness and hatred every day because that's all they've learned. I remember when Linda did a sermon, I think it was a student service. I remember one of the things she said was, be kind to one another. Because if you're you may be the one person that's nice to another person that day or ever. And I remember that really stayed with me. You know, but part of that kindness that we extend to others, we have to extend to ourselves as well. So for years, I thought that my sense of self-worth was tied to the way that I made other people feel. And because I didn't feel like my own feelings were important, I didn't value myself the way that I should. You know, I accepted situations where there was no love because somehow that's all I felt that I was worthy of. So when we find ourselves in situations, even like in the job, you know, in places where we feel like we're out of control, part of it is that those situations are a mirror for what lies within, which often is, I'm not worthy of anything better. I'm not worthy of anything better. You know, and you see this in people's love relationships. And like I said, you also see this in the workplace where, you know, if there's abuse going on, if there's disrespect going on, you know, even if the person is the perceived victim, and this is the thing is that I'm starting to realize that this notion of victimhood is really a myth. And I've had terrible things happen to me. I've had terrible abuse, you know, but I always thought it was my fault. But part of what I needed to realize was my responsibility for my own sense of self-worth and realizing that validation from external sources was never going to fill me up. So the prayer of St. Francis is that in giving of ourselves that we receive, and this is absolutely true, but what exactly are we giving of ourselves if we believe that incompleteness is our truth, that we need someone else to complete us, or I need the car or the house or, you know, the job title to complete myself? If you believe that, then incompleteness is your truth. And then, ironically, if we give from a place of incompleteness, incompleteness only perpetuates itself. You will never be satisfied. You will never feel like you belong. You will never feel love in the truest sense. Love is one of those words that's thrown around a lot. I mean, you can say, I love pizza, you know, love getting up late, early mornings, and even I love you to another person is misused all the time. Because I love you in that case doesn't mean I see you. It means, what can you do for me? There is this unwritten agreement that this person is somehow going to fulfill your needs. So when you say, I love you, and that person doesn't do what you want them to do, you may go into a state of anger. I'm angry. I said I love you, and you're not doing what I want. Mm-hmm. Well, you've completely missed the point of the I love you. But I love you is used in that context so many times that we grow to accept it. When I was on the way here, I was listening to songs on the radio, and there was a song by Pink, who I actually really, really love. But when you listen to some of her songs, I mean, they're crazy, you know. You know, the song was, you know, I can be really ugly, I can be really insulting, I don't know how many times I've thrown you out of here, but please don't leave me. Please don't leave me. And I was thinking, why wouldn't that person leave, you know? Yeah, but it's framed as a love song, and you know, this became a number one hit. And so there are so many messages out there that perpetuate this myth of incompleteness, which is, hey, the only way that I'm going to feel loved is if you do something for me. So how do we change, though? If this has been our conditioning, where I have to please others in order for me to feel worthy of even existing, how do we get to this place where you can say the words, I am enough? Because really that's what it all boils down to. I am enough. Well, you can actually say it as an affirmation. You can look in the mirror. You've got to look yourself straight in the eye and say, I am enough. And I got to tell you, it's pretty hard to do. I took Bikram yoga a few years ago when I was going through my divorce because it made me suffer, but I felt like I was also doing something good for myself. Because you're in a 120-degree room doing yoga, and I wasn't very flexible. I was a lot heavier than I was now, a lot heavier. I had a lot of excess weight. And so part of it is I was trying to lose weight because I was going to sweat it all out. But it ended up being a really great spiritual practice for me because at the very end of the practice, you have to sit Japanese style and look into the mirror. And the teacher would always say, look into the eyes of your true teacher. And I cannot begin to tell you how much I hated that part of the class because I could not look straight ahead. I would look here, I'd look there, I'd be like... And my yoga teacher would always call me out. She'd be like, Jen, look into the eyes of your true teacher. She was really hardcore. She was Chilean and really scary. But she was really scary. But it was funny because she told me that every time I went to class. And then I finally looked into the eyes of my true teacher. And I smiled because I realized, I am my own true teacher. I really am. So, you know, one of the things I want all of you to do is to do that practice, is to look into the mirror and say, I am enough. You know, and to let go of all those things and those excuses and reasons for why you were not. For me, I had so many excuses. I'm not enough because I don't have this degree, or I'm not enough because I don't make XYZ money, or I'm not enough because whatever it is, whatever reasons maybe your parents told you, or your supposed friends told you, or your lovers told you, you're enough simply by the fact that you exist. And I'm graced by your presence. So thank you. I want to tell you thank you for being here. You don't have to do anything for me, by the way. I tell this to some of my friends, and they kind of look at me like I'm a little whacked. But I really mean it. I'm like, you don't have to do anything. I just want to tell you I'm grateful for your existence and for the fact that I know you. And that's all I want to do, is to acknowledge that you're, by your existence, by your being here on the planet and being in my particular life on a planet out of 7 billion people, you have made my life better than merely existing. I remember, it's funny because I used to think this stuff was pretty woo-woo, but I remember back in high school reading an essay by Einstein, and he spoke of something called cosmic religious feeling, which transcended the traditional paradigms of religion based on fear and punishment. And one of my friends at the time, I remember talking to him, we were on the beach and it was this beautiful moonless night, so you could see all the stars over the ocean, and we were talking about this, like, what does this mean, this, you know, cosmic religious feeling? Because I wasn't sure that that was the right terminology, and we determined that the terminology for us was greater human goodness. And I realized, despite everything that has happened to me all these years, that greater human goodness is really what we have all been looking for. So when people are crying out for justice on the streets of St. Louis and Ferguson, Missouri, or in the streets of Florida, or the streets of Palestine, or wherever conflict is, people are not really crying out for justice as much as they are looking for goodness, looking for a way to say, there has to be another way, and the way won't be through retribution. To me, that's pretty clear. Retribution is not going to work. But if we can't love ourselves first, then we can't possibly love others. And so my challenge to you when you leave here is to give all the love to yourself that you're deserving of. Because most of us actually don't do a very good job of that. We do a great job with other people. I know I do a great job with my son, and I do a great job with my parents. But I don't always do a great job with myself. And you're like, well, how's that going to change the world if I change myself? Well, I think all of us realize that we're all energetic beings and that the energy you put out is the message you put out, that we're The analogy I would use is one of a lighthouse. We don't have to go running around everywhere to make things happen. You can just be exactly where you're at in the same spot forever and shine your light and people will see it. So I hope that all of you will be that beacon of light and love, and you'll use that affirmation, I am enough. And if you want more affirmations, I strongly suggest Louise Hay. I adore her. If you don't know Louise Hay, Google her. Or just talk to me afterwards. I've got some affirmations on my iPhone I can give to you. So as we say in the Filipino language, I want to say opo, which is the equivalent of namaste, and that is the love within me recognizes the love within you. So thank you.